Hey, everybody, how about a little post-Halloween bonus ep? How about that?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Let's talk about what the hell?
You know what? It's weird, too. It's like the day after Halloween, you just don't feel like watching like a scary movie. It's like that lead up of like November 1st. I'm like, yeah, I think I'm done.
Yeah. You don't want to watch a rom-com.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, all right. Now it's moving on.
I want to watch Bradley Cooper in Kitchen Confidential.
Yeah. I hope he's in a sassy pose on the poster.
Oh, it's hijinks in the kitchen, Chris.
Yeah.
Some people, ooh, there's affairs.
Who knows what goes on in the kitchen? Do I want to know?
Do you? Oh, to be a fly on that wall. So yeah, we're going to talk about, you know, maybe some of our favorite Halloween movies and stuff like that. And then we also, we have a little later on in the episode, we have an interview that you did with...
Yes, with Denise Gossett, the head of Shriekfest, who's been doing it every year for a very long time.
15 years.
And at one point... she mentions After Dark, and I almost dropped the recorder.
Well, that was one of the things in listening to the interview, which is going to come up in a sec, that you know, she talks about a lot of the movies at Shriekfest get bought up, and we've talked about this in the past, is that one of the reasons why the horror genre is so popular is, well, the fans obviously like it, but because there is such a demand for it, it gives film, you know, young, new filmmakers, whatever, because you don't need a giant budget. You don't need a huge name attached
right.
to it. You just need the right kind of horror and a decent story.
It's a great filmmaking entry point.
Yeah.
It really is, because you don't have to get those other elements that you might need with a comedy, obviously, or a drama, or even action. I mean, those cost a lot more money to make, but horror and genre, while it used to be cost prohibitive, now with effects and computers and just creativity with the filmmakers, you can make these on a micro and low budgets now and have them compelling.
I think kind of almost like the action film fan, they're the horror fan, the diehard horror fan is a little more forgiving. Like,
yes.
They'll go into it saying, oh yeah, the, you know, it didn't have it was low budget, so the effects or whatever weren't that
right.
great, or they shot it in two locations or something. But oh man, this was cool and that was cool, and there was some good acting in it, and the story really moved. So let's go into, like, what are some of your favorite all time?
You know, I really like the atmospheric ones. I know we've talked about some horror movies before on the on some upcoming episodes. We were talking with Frank and a couple of the other filmmakers and comics. But I want to mention one thing before I talk about movies, how much I enjoy what Universal has done with Halloween Horror Nights. And they do this in Florida and in Hollywood. And it's the reason I really like it is because it takes it so much to the next level as far as just, like, you know, we've all gone to those haunted houses.
Sure.
and you know, no matter what neighborhood you're in, there's a hayride, there's a cornfield, there's a maze, there's some kind of haunted house. But when you go to Universal, everything is, 90% is movie themed. And also you have special effects that are movie grade. So you're going into these elaborate sets, and you're actually being in these movies, which is really absolutely fascinating. The thing that they do that is so clever is that there's like millions of people that go every year, so it's not like it's not crowded.
Right.
So how do you scare people when a million people are going through the maze at the same time? And what they do is they have like really clever twists and turns and like corners. So you could turn a corner, even though there's people in front of you, and get get scared shitless because something's jumped out at you that you didn't see or whatever. We were in the Evil Dead one, and like you're just walking through it, and one of the deadites just jumped out right in front of my wife and just like screamed like right in her face. She was terrifying. And then just disappears into like this hidden wall or door that you don't even see because it's dark inside. And I think my favorite one, though, was the American Werewolf in London maze. And Neil and I and Audrey, we just absolutely loved it because it was so – the production design was amazing on it. Like, you literally walk in, you're in a pub, like in the UK, like at the beginning.
Oh.
It's like, beware, you're going out onto the moors or whatever. You know, the bartender's telling
right.
you. But it's so elaborate. It's like a full pub – set that you walk in.
And there's actors in there drinking and playing
exactly.
darts.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really
and
cool.
then you walk out, and then you know, then you start, you're in the, quote, wilderness, and then somebody comes up with a gun and shoots a wolf right next to you. And as you go through, you start seeing the werewolves, and there are these giant puppets that come out, and they have the sound right. effects and stuff. But then there was one that I missed because there's so much going on at the same time. It was so elaborate that Neil commented. He said one of them was like eating a guy on the floor, but when he passed, it stopped and like looked at him. So there's actors and cameras and all this stuff where, like with the puppetry, where it looks real. So if you're a horror fan and you're especially a horror movie fan, the Halloween Horror Nights is really, really fun. But as far as movies go, I'll tell you, it's I'm not a big fan of like the torture and gore type stuff. I really like the psychological stuff a little bit more. Like if you go back to like movies like the original Haunting, and even we had Tyler and Dave mentioned a couple good films like Session 9 is a really creepy insane asylum movie about, you know, guys that go in or they're kind of like. They're trying to clean up the place, like the restore. They're like contractors that go in, and you know, shit starts to go down. But it's one of those things where you see no gore, you see no monsters, but it's absolutely terrifying and unsettling. And that's one of the great things about horror movies. They don't have to show you a monster eating somebody. It could have like this pervasive sense of dread throughout the entire film, where you're on your seat and uncomfortable. And you're not really sure why. Like it's just that kind of atmosphere that really hits you in a movie. And I think Session 9 did that really, really well.
It's funny you bring that up because one of the ones that sticks with me, now I saw this as a kid, was the original Amityville Horror with James Brolin and Margot Kidder. Now, as a kid, and one of the things is it slowly built up the creepiness as the house got weirder and weirder.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that it was based on a true story.
Right.
So here's, and looking now as a kid, I was like, wow. And I look back now and go, and there's a little hokey end thing on that film, but.
And there's a million sequels.
There's a million sequels or whatever, mm-hmm. but why I would recommend this movie to no one who has seen it, or if it's been a long time, is because it was directed by Stuart Rosenberg, who did Cool Hand Luke.
Right.
And he also did Brubaker and The Pope of Greenwich Village. And so what the thing that's amazing about this is, first I want to talk about like Cool Hand Luke, obviously. If you haven't, please see that movie. It's great. But then Brubaker is one of these movies that was like in the Robert Redford sort of heyday wheelhouse. And it's about prison reform. It's got Morgan Freeman in it. And it wasn't, for whatever reason, it wasn't the huge breakout, mm-hmm. but it was one of those movies that had a lot of heavy social commentary. Robert Redford, basically, the movie starts out and he's in jail and he's coming into prison and he sees how awful it is. And then after being in a couple of days, he's like, guess what? I'm the new warden. He intentionally went in under secrecy to see what was really
the conditions,
to see the
stuff.
Conditions.
Right.
And then he finds there's all this corruption and he's trying to fight the power and all this stuff like that. And it's got a really, Yaphet Kotto's in it. And there's all these really solid character actors. The guy, I forget, who plays Rocky Balboa's boss, the loan shark, that actor is like, hey, Rock, you remember that guy? You know, there's this great scene where all the trustees are talking in Brubaker and that actor goes, some black guy's talking and whatever the guy's name, he goes, hey, Davis, you know what I think? I think your mother. And then a big fight breaks out. You know? And it was a really cool movie. And obviously the Pope of Greenwich Village is another, that's young Mickey Rourke. That's really right. Before he went nuts. I mean, it's like, it was, these are solid movies. And Amityville Horror, you take this really amazing director that mm-hmm. knows how to construct story and build tension and use these really amazing actors. And that's what you see. There's all this other stuff going on. James Brolin is the stepdad to Margot Kidder's kids. And then you have, in the Amityville Horror, you've got, you know, you've got people like Rod Steiger is playing Father Delaney.
Right.
Which is an amazing scene.
Remember with the flies?
The flies. And, mm-hmm. And the house basically, you know, tries to break this, you know, hardened Irish mm-hmm. Catholic priest who's mm-hmm. stared the devil in his eye, you know. Right.
And had a drink with him.
Had a drink with him. Had a long drink, if you know what I mean, for medicinal purposes. So there's like, you know, and it's again, before Margot Kidder went nuts, when she was right. like, it's like, and all these, it's James Brolin. It builds this scary tension. It doesn't have a lot of gore.
It also was based on a terrifying book people, I remember just having friends, relatives, everyone reading it saying how absolutely terrifying.
It's terrifying, and this really happened. And then afterwards was this couple lying, and there's a whole the thing about
a little controversy.
Yeah. But I remember then any house in my neighborhood that had those windows,
right? That how genius was that to find a house that looks like it's fucking staring
has
at you.
Eyes.
Yeah,
there was a house or two in my neighborhood that at night I would run past,
right?
Because I thought it was the Amityville Horror House was going to come get me. And that's, you know, it also says maybe I was a little too young. My parents took a 10-year-old boy to this.
Yeah, if you were running past homes with lights. Yeah.
But there was this era in the late 70s, early 80s, and these are a lot of movies that we would see at drive-ins. There was the Amityville Horror that was really slow and scary. There was also The Fog. Now, The Fog definitely does not hold up, the one that came out in late 70s.
No, it doesn't.
Not at all.
You know what else doesn't hold up? The Fog remake.
No, yeah. It all never held up.
No.
But at the time, as a kid, I was like terrified by these
right.
films. But I would really go back and watch the Amityville Horror. I recommend that movie a lot.
And then you can also see how studios milk a franchise for every nickel that it's worth.
Right.
Because Amityville Horror goes all the way down from sequels to the Amityville Dollhouse. There is actually a movie, The Amityville Dollhouse.
Oh.
It's Haunted Dollhouse. The funny thing is the shape of the dollhouse is that.
Oh, great.
The house.
And the doll comes out and goes, get out!
And also it inspired movies like Poltergeist, which was also, seeing that as a kid was extremely terrifying.
That's another movie that built the tension.
Right.
To all this.
And it all made sense.
Right. It all made sense. It wasn't for no reason.
Right.
There wasn't like the gore in it. There wasn't that much gore. Like when the guy starts eating his own face.
Right.
It wasn't gore just for gore. It was gore because the Poltergeist made that guy lose his shit.
Right.
And then the next day, they're like, oh, what happened to Steve? Yeah.
Didn't work out.
It didn't work out for him. It's just like, oh.
And you also see, like, even, like, movies like the original Paranormal Activity. I love when they follow, like, a logic and where everything, where it may seem like it doesn't make sense, but it does. It all kind of follows, like, it all falls into place. Mm-hmm. Like, it even goes through, like, especially with Paranormal Activity, at the beginning, it goes through, like, basically what common knowledge is like, well, no, there's spirits, there's hauntings, there's demons, there's demonology, it's all different. And, like, the medium was like, no, you don't have a ghost, you have a demon, and he doesn't like that I'm here. And it was really interesting to see, like, well, what does that demon want, and what's going on here? And it all followed this logic that played out. Like, it wasn't like just random scenes and random things happening. Because what happens sometimes is when you deal with supernatural or fantasy elements, the filmmakers get sloppy. Like, well, I can do whatever I want. This is a made-up character. This is a made-up monster. I could make up the rules as I go along. And it's never as effective as if you know what the rules are, you follow them, and even if you break them later, there's a reason for it. If you follow that logical progression.
And I think what happens is then they get so like, oh, we'll just have this crazy monster do all this crazy stuff because we can, or we're in love with the technology or whatever.
Right.
And it's like, drive the story. I want to go back to another sort of slow, creepy movie from my childhood, which is Magic. And I think
with the ventriloquist dummy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anthony Hopkins, Burgess Meredith, and Anne Margaret. Now, it's directed by Richard Attenborough, you know, and it's based on a novel by William Goldman, who also wrote the screenplay. So
I've never heard of those names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Richard Attenborough, you know, who's mainly, is, you know, he's in the first Jurassic Park. But he you know, directed Chaplin, he directed Cry Freedom, he directed Gandhi.
A lot of voiceovers for nature documentaries.
But Magic was one of those movies that was just slow and creepy. Mm-hmm. And when something kind of, when horrible happened, like there was some like people getting hurt or killed or whatever,
right.
It wasn't again just, and I'm not just knocking like, oh, movies today are too bloody. I'm not knocking that. Like when it's done, when it's done for the right reasons, which is just to show actually how brutal it really is or whatever.
Right.
But the way that movie was so, those movies that are just dark and shadowy and there's a lot of silence and people creepily walking down a hallway.
The
and,
original Nosferatu.
Oh, shit.
I mean, the way that's shot with shadow and lighting, and it's really creepy.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult to even get like a really restored print or even see it. But still, if you look at it, especially at the time, I remember reading that like when Nosferatu like was in the boat and just kind of came up because he was on the plank, like he just like went from a lying down position to standing up, it like freaked people out in the movie theaters.
Yeah,
like little things like that, like the original King Kong freaked people out in God. Movie theaters. Like it's hard to watch these movies with a contemporary eye. You have to really be a little forgiving and like how terrifying these were at the time. Whereas the psychological ones, like The Haunting, you can still really see a little bit what kind of went on, because you don't see monsters or ghosts. It's all kind of happens in the shadows.
Well, that's before we get into hearing what Denise has to say about basically the kind of the state of horror.
Yes, and festivals.
And festivals. Mm-hmm. Let's talk to our good people at Casper.
Casper mattresses.
Oh, my favorite.
You still enjoying your mattress?
Dude, I've been traveling so much that when I come home, I need to get on, like,
right.
I was visiting family and was sleeping on a couch, and then I was hotel rooms and, you know, some beds in Australia where, you know, you got to lay in the bed and it goes in a different
direction. It goes a different direction.
It's in a different direction.
Your dreams go in a different direction.
Your dreams go in a different direction. So when I come home to my Casper mattress, I cannot recommend this enough. We were driving to lunch today and there was a billboard for it.
Yeah, it was the first one I've seen.
Yeah, they've been doing some interesting billboards, and I was like, I love the.
Yeah, it was a picture of you sleeping. That
it was just
weird.
Me. It was just weird. Like somebody snuck into my place. Yeah. I found that a little creepy. But yeah, these mattresses, literally, I've been sleeping on this thing for whatever now, 6-7 months, and I love it.
And they're what's great is, you know, the quality is really good, but the prices are really good. Like mattresses can often cost over, what, $1,500? But these cost between $500 for a twin size, $750 for a full size, $850 for queen, and $950 for a king size.
So, like, I have a queen, right? Mm-hmm. So, $850, but we can knock $50 off of that if you go to casper.com/comedyfilmnerds and use promo code comedyfilmnerds. You save $50. And here's the other great thing. It's free shipping.
Yes.
And 100-day trial.
So, what if I'm at day 70 and I decide, you know what, not for me?
Send it back. You know what the shipping costs you? Nothing.
Nice.
So there's no gamble, guys. There's no risk. Right. And I too was like, this is weird. They're sending a mattress to my house.
Yeah, how am I going to try it out?
That's this weird. Is weird.
And if I do not like it, the return's going to be a hassle.
It's going to be a hassle.
That's the first thing I'm thinking of.
It was,
but they make it easy.
They make it really easy. And I'm telling you, it's memory foam. And it's, I really love it. If you have sleep issues like I do,
right,
all the time zones and all the, I mean, it's I can't shut my crazy brain off. Mm-hmm. So I need a good mattress, and I'm not joking. The mattress I had prior to this cost me $2,000.
Right.
It was really nice. It was worth it, but this is less than half and it's a better mattress.
Well, there you go.
So,
all right. Casper mattress. Remember casper.com/comedyfilmnerds and use promo code comedyfilmnerds. Now, but before we get to the interview with Denise, there's one thing I wanted to say about the trends that I've noticed for horror movies right now. We're seeing a lot more horror comedies, and I think that's good. I love horror comedies, especially, like, you know, like I said, I really enjoyed Bloodsucking Freaks, and even we're talking about last weekend, we had Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse and Freaks of Nature both came out. But I want to reference something that some of our previous guests had said, too. I still want to see the new creative, interesting, scary horror movies. And you know where they're being played? In the festivals. Mm-hmm. This is actually where you can find those. They're innovative, they're interesting, and they're scary.
Because the only horror films that I'm seeing that are getting major distribution are all of this, like, Insidious and
they're already franchises. I mean, like, I really enjoyed Crimson Peak. That was a good studio movie. I mean, like we were talking about before, the you know, the script could have used some work, but as far as like atmosphere and creepiness and just the overall look, but it had the feel of a giant studio movie. You're not getting that independent kind of
It's Guillermo del Toro.
You're not, and so festivals are really the place to find these little gems of horror movies.
And then I'm sure then you got to go and kind of search them out on VOD and
iTunes
and stuff.
And there's
like that.
Literally no advertising. There's no. You have to either go to message boards or word of mouth to actually find the ones. Cut the wheat from the chaff, as it were.
Which, obviously, in one sense, that's a little annoying that it's not at your local movie theater. But in the other sense, it is sort of this amazing, you know, search. And when you find these things, they are sort of this like scavenger hunt finds of these amazing gems.
It's like finding buried treasure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that's cool. And you know, it'd be cool if we need to acquire one of these movies and sell them on our site.
Oh, I already talked to Neil about that. He's getting us a list together from the ones that...
Good.
We're there for
good,
sure.
Because I want to be able to like introduce people to a really interesting film.
That's one of the things we're working on too. We want to introduce you guys to the movies that we're finding too.
And I'd like to get a really slow moving, creepy.
Yeah, we have to give Chris Broadstone money to make a feature.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That'd be cool. All right, well, here we go. Here's the interview between Chris Mancini and Denise, what's her last name?
Gossett.
Denise Gossett from this year's past Shriekfest.
All right, I'm here with Denise Gossett for the Shriekfest Film Festival. Now, what year is that, this, Denise?
15th.
15th.
I know, it's crazy.
Wow, before we had kids.
I know, it's crazy. Life before.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So have you seen a definite progression in the 15 years?
Yes, I have. You know, when we first started, you know, we'd smaller amounts of submissions. Now it's like from every country out there, tons of submissions. The quality has really gone through the roof. Like, you know, I hear people saying, oh, man, it's hard to get in Shriekfest now. Well, it is because, okay, let's say you're submitting a feature.
Right.
We only take 10.
Right, it's a smaller festival.
Right, so that's pretty hard to get into. And, you know, I've thought about through the years, like, making it longer. No, it would just exhaust me more, so why not keep it tight and have it be hard to get into?
What about, like, multiple screenings at any
You know, we did that once. Mm-hmm. I had the smaller theaters open at the same time, and we had shorts in one and features in the other.
Right.
And I felt like it wasn't allowing people to see everything, and people kept going, well, I had to choose, and I really wanted to see this, but I, you know, that sort of thing. And I felt like it wasn't giving the filmmakers the attention that I wanted them to have.
Okay.
Because people had to choose between one screening or another. Mm-hmm. This way, everyone sees everything if they want to.
Now, have you been here at the Raleigh Screening Rooms the entire 15 years?
Yes.
Wow.
I know. Well, you know, their projection is fantastic.
Yeah.
And they upgrade it always because they have to be on top of things because they're on the studio lot.
Right.
And, you know, big people come in here and test their films and all that, so they got to be top-notch stuff. Mm-hmm. And too many filmmakers walk out of their screening and say, I have never seen my movie look so good.
Oh, very cool.
So... yeah, you know, maybe it's a little bit harder to get back in here. Mm-hmm. Maybe it doesn't have restaurants and bars and all that. But what's the point of a film festival if you're not going
to
make
it? If it's not hard to get to.
Well, that or make the filmmakers look great.
Exactly.
You know, their film should look great as it can. So.
And I love having it, like, on the lot. Like, it's so cool to just walk on a movie lot and actually get to go to the screenings.
Right, and there's things shooting all over the place. Yeah. It's so crazy.
Well, now, for Shriekfest, too, it's a horror film festival, but you do different genres, though, for
we
sure.
Do,
like, you definitely program thriller and some
sci-fi
fantasy.
Yeah.
And what's your favorite non-horror genre to program?
Probably the sci-fis or the thriller. Well, I'm more thriller because, I like that intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would say thriller, for
okay.
sure.
And how have you seen filmmaking evolve over the last 15 years, especially genre filmmaking, like specifically to horror? How have you seen that change in 15 years?
What has changed is you know, when we started Shriekfest, not everyone could make a film.
Right.
It wasn't easily accessible. And now everything's digital. Things are cheaper. So people can. Anyone can make a film. And what I'm seeing is, oh, there's a lot of talented people out there, and they're making films. And I think that's part of the reason why it's harder to get in as well.
Do you watch every submission?
I do.
Wow.
Because I'm insane. Well, here's the thing. I have 40 judges, mm-hmm. so they narrow down. Mm-hmm. But there's still a part of me that's like, what if something slips through the cracks? Mm-hmm. So if it has lower votes, I still will, you know, turn it on and just make sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm like, oh, okay, they're right, I'll move on. I know, and maybe it's control freak in me, but I'm always worried something's going to slip through.
Has that ever happened where a movie has low votes and you saw it and I'm like, no,
yes.
You guys are all wrong. I'm
yes.
pulling this one.
Yes. And
do you remember the name of the movie?
No, but I would say it happens probably every year.
Really?
Yeah. There's always something, and I don't know if it's they're judging harsher because they're expecting a studio movie.
Mm-hmm.
But really, if you think about it, I'm the only one that knows what is par for Shriekfest because I'm the only one that's been here all 15 years.
Right.
So I know what our audience likes. I know what's going to play well. And it's funny because, like, I've had judges come to the festival and on something that they didn't like as much, but I programmed it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they see it with an audience on the big screen, they're like, I understand now. So it's like just something that I know, I
sometimes
think.
Sometimes in a judge viewing doesn't click the same as like a room full of people watching.
Exactly.
The
there's more mm-hmm. energy. And I know that if a movie...
Or it could be the opposite, too, sometimes.
Right. If the energy's bad, people are all there to hate it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that doesn't usually happen here because mm-hmm. it's all like everyone's just so kind and
yeah.
warm and accepting.
And you get a lot of people, the fans that come out, they want to see the entire program.
Yes.
No one comes here to see one movie and
no.
then leaves.
No. Matter of fact, we have, like, people camp out in the back rows. They bring their lunch and they sit there and watch everything, which I couldn't even do that. You know, it's one thing when you're watching them on your, mm-hmm. your computer, your TV screen, but to sit in a movie theater for 3 days?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if I can.
Well, that's what Neil's going to do.
I know, and he loves it.
He does. I talked to him this tonight. I said, you want to grab dinner before the festival? And he goes, you know, last year I went out to get something to eat, and I missed a really good film. I'm not making that mistake again.
Exactly. Exactly. They don't want to miss them, which I think is so cool, because we do get a lot of really good independent horror, sci-fi. And these people deserve the attention, and I know the fans love them.
Now, you have basically a regular fan base that comes every
yes,
year.
And
yes. that's also expanding, too. How do you yes. get the word out? Because you're a smaller festival
and
you don't
have
the giant
budget. It's really been
mm-hmm.
word of mouth. People just tell people. Or like, there's people that would come to the opening night party because, you know, it's so big.
Right.
And I started giving a free screening ticket to anyone who paid to come in the party.
Mm-hmm.
So then that made people go, oh, you know, it's free. Let's go check it out.
Right.
Well, they never leave.
Right.
They'll always stay for at least one more.
Right.
And then they're like, oh my gosh, Shriekfest is great. I've been missing mm-hmm. it all these years. You know, that sort of thing. So that has helped mm-hmm. introduce more people to it. We try to do contests online and stuff to try to give out free tickets so people can come try it out, sort of speak.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's working because it's definitely building up the fans.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about, since you've been involved basically in a film festival for the last 15 years, mm-hmm. you've seen Facebook, Twitter, you know, and
before that,
and you've been running a festival before, you know, before all that. Is it tougher to get people to come out to a film festival now because of the internet and there's screens everywhere and there's content everywhere? What is it that you do to get people to come out? No, this is a very special event. You have to be in person to see this.
Well, you know, having a festival in Los Angeles
is not the easiest thing.
No.
As we know.
Yes. There is an event every day of the week. There's a festival every day of
yes.
the week. So people have to pick and choose. And that's where...
Or they're jaded. They don't bother.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, I'm not leaving the house. Traffic's mm-hmm. too much of a pain in the butt. I'm not doing it.
All so, valid yeah. reasons, by the way,
exactly.
when you live in Los Angeles.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Exactly, because yeah. sometimes you're just like, oh, it's not worth it.
Right.
But these films are so good that it must be worth it because these people are, you know, battling the elements of LA to get here. But I think
we
Twitter,
have out of towners too, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, we have people flying from all over the place. Even fans flying in, which is great. I love that. But to answer your question about Twitter and all that, oh yeah, we use it. I think it helps. I think it really helps a lot, especially when someone attends and then tweets, "I'm at Shriekfest," or they take a picture with one of like the zombies in the theater or something and they tweet. It's only going to make people go, "Where are you? Where'd you take this picture?" And then, okay, now more people know. So all those little things. We do a lot of, we do a commercial contest. It's free to enter. You just make a commercial about Shriekfest and you have to mention it's the 15th year. And so those were competing online for a while, and that got all kinds of buzz about the festival. So little things like that. When you don't have the budget, you get creative.
You get creative with your marketing strategies.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You have to, with, especially with a festival. Now, right. How many submissions do you get a year?
The last time we counted... It's terrible. I really should count. I always say, I'm going to count when the festival's over. And when the festival's over, you know, I'm dead.
Yes.
I want nothing more to do with it. Like, I need a break. So, like, this
festival,
year...
Yeah, we all collapse, for sure.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I haven't counted. Mm-hmm. I have it on my to-do list to do after the festival, but odds are I probably won't.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't have an answer for you. I haven't counted in a long time. But I can tell that it's more because... Mm-hmm. When we get close to crunch time, I'm watching 10 movies a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's interesting you said that the quality has gone up
over
the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Now, do you get more movies submitted with like recognizable names in them now?
We do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't always get in.
Right.
Because it may have those people, or it may be... Yeah, it's amazing because sometimes we'll get a film, and it's like... Wow, it's beautiful. Production value is beautiful. It's got a recognizable faces. Oh, my goodness. The story's horrible. So, no.
Right.
I'm not going to put it in just because, you know, there's some known names in it. We're not.
You don't have to please the studio just by or the marketing department.
Exactly. Exactly.
You can make this your own decisions.
That's what I love about Shriekfest. It's independent.
Mm-hmm.
The studio people, the stars, they do not need the publicity.
Right.
They already have it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the little guys and the little ladies that need all the publicity. And so that... Do we sometimes show something? Sure. If something comes in and Eric Roberts is in it and it happens to be good, sure, we'll show it. But it doesn't happen that often, which makes it tricky when you're trying to, like, send out press releases and publicize.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who's in it? All new people? you know, that sort of thing. But the movie's good, so come see it.
Right, right. But you have the word of mouth and, you know, the 15 years of cred.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think is in the future for Shriekfest?
Do you think you'll stay
here? You think you'll go to another venue, expand?
Well, you know, every year I have checked other venues, and...
So, it's kind of like Comic-Con. Every year they threaten to leave San Diego, that they never do.
Right, right, because you kind of get in the groove.
Uh-huh.
And, like I told you, their projection system here is just amazing. So every time I go check out a place, either it's out of budget, or it's not nice enough, or it's too small, or it's too big. You know, there's so many factors. But, yeah, I'm not going to lie. I have tried to find other places. But then there's downside, too. Let's say you find one that has bars and restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where do you think the people are? The bars and restaurants. My whole point is I want them watching the movies, seeing the people's talent. If they're constantly going to the bar... It's not going to be good. So.
So you're looking at other places, but you may still be here.
Yes, okay. Probably.
Tell me the movies that you're most excited about for 2015, this festival. Or a couple of them. You've seen all of them.
I have. many times. It just depends on what you like, you know? Because we have zombies, we have ghosts. We actually have some that are scary.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a rarity, so that's so nice to get some like that. There's a movie called Interior that's about a haunted house, and it is indeed scary. And there is a movie called 615 that is a one-person POV, a feature shot in one take.
Wow.
One take.
That's the zombie movie, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's funny because there's little tricks, and they're doing it. We're going to do a Q&A with them, actually, because I want to
hear. Is like a zombie rope?
A zombie rope?
Rope for the Alfred Hitchcock movie.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's really neat, some of the things they did. Like, the first scene mm-hmm. is in complete darkness. And you're kind of watching, like, is something wrong with this movie? Because you hear a woman talking. But the person's POV, he's asleep. He's in bed. So then when he wakes up, you start to see a little bit of someone waking up, their eyes opening, but now it's blurry.
So it's not found footage, it's actually the POV of the character.
Yep. The whole movie in one take. Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. I talked to the filmmaker, they like had a camera strapped to him. Mm-hmm. But one of the first scenes after he wakes up, it's blurry, and so you're wondering, what is going on? Like, is this like a horrible filmmaker or what? Then you see him take a contact, mm-hmm. stick it in his eye. Well, now this side of the screen is clear, and this side is blurry. And then once he puts that other one, it's clear. Oh, and I was just up in there when that scene was on. The mm-hmm. audience clapped.
Oh, cool.
Because it looked so, like, how did he pull this off?
Now, last question. Name a Shriekfest success story, a movie that played here and then went on to get distribution or...
Oh, gosh, 95% of them get distribution. Mm-hmm. Like, quick, some even before the festival's over. It's crazy. Because, you know, Lionsgate and After Dark, you know, all these big companies will come. Mm-hmm. They want to snatch up our movies before the festival's over because they know once it's over that they're going to be snatched up.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's lots of them, lots. Mm-hmm. There is...
And our fans are going, did you just mention After Dark? And I will tell you my After Dark Lionsgate story after the interview.
Okay. I cannot wait. Okay. So then...
Our fans have heard it ad nauseum, so I won't put it in again here.
He'll share it with me.
Yeah.
But Mike Flanagan, he had a movie in the festival called Absentia, mm-hmm. and he won. And I think it was like a year or 2 years later, he did Oculus. And you saw the billboards everywhere.
Yes.
That mm-hmm. was his movie. So he's Shriekfest alumni. So we have a lot of those where, you know, people did
they move
saw
on to bigger
movies.
Things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's really cool. I love it.
So it's great. You can have almost like an incubation festival for horror.
Well, I don't even know if I can even give any credit to Shriekfest for it. It's just somehow we happen to find these talented people who just kept going up the ladder.
Yeah, you can take a little credit for that.
It's exciting.
So, vacation plans after the festival?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh, yes. Like, chill. It's funny because the festival end, and, you know, there's still a good 2 weeks or so of press releases and wrapping things up and updating the website and mm-hmm. putting pictures up from the party and all that stuff. But I'll be getting emails from people saying, when is call open? Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? I'm still recovering from this year. So it's so funny. And there have been years where I put it off to January, February, because I'm like, I can't do it. Now, last year, we started right back up in November getting submissions.
Wow.
I know. I don't know how this year will be yet. Got to see how I feel at the end.
Well, we are looking forward to it. Like I said, Neil will be here the entire time. Ooh. I'm actually looking forward to the movies tonight. I'm going to be watching.
Wonderful.
Is it Chatter?
Chatter,
is that the one?
Yep.
Chatters tonight?
Yep. And The Answer.
The Answer, yeah.
Yep.
We'll be checking that out tonight.
Both great movies.
Very cool. Well, thanks again, Denise. It's always a pleasure coming here.
Thank you.
And talking to you. And we'll look forward to 2016.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Chris.
All right. Nice.
No, it was good. It was a good interview. It was, you know, she splits her time now between L.A. and Florida, so I don't get a chance to talk to her as much, but... I love that Shriekfest is like this small labor of love festival. It really has that personalized feel to it. And it'll always stay that way because that's the way they want to run it, which is cool.
It's really cool because every year, I mean, I haven't been to it in a couple years, but there was when we were going several years in a row, it was always a cool vibe.
Yes.
And were welcome and respected. It's not like, oh, some little film podcast right? here trying to scrape up interviews.
Denise always rolls out the red carpet
yeah,
for us.
Yeah, and it's really cool, and it's seeing the variety of, like, the seasoned professional who loves the genre, or it's maybe their first foray into the genre, and then the young filmmakers, just like, I don't know, we had a little bit of money, and we had some right. cameras, and we shot this crazy thing. Like, Neil interviewed some people. The tech, we ended up not being able to use it, but he interviewed some guys that, like, shot something down in Houston, like,
yeah.
at their parents' house or something like mm-hmm. that, which is really interesting. So, very cool. Very cool episode, and always great. You know, we haven't done a remote interview in a while.
No, we're going to be doing more of them, too.
Yeah. I want to go to more festivals, but we will with earbuds.
Yes.
So that's our post-Halloween bonus ep with another interview from Shriekfest 2015. So that's our episode, you guys. And of course, you know, I got some road dates coming up in Asia and whatever else. And,
you know, in between sleeping on your Casper mattress.
Oh, sleep like a baby, kid.
You're going to Asia for like 3 weeks.
Yes. So I'm going to sleep the shit out of my mattress before I go there and then dream about it when I'm on some weird Chinese hotel mattress or something. I'm in Cambodia sleeping on a rickshaw. All right, guys. So as we said, you know, go to the store, spend $20 with us once a year. It's coming up on the holiday season. You want to get your Christmas shopping done.
Yep. And the new CFN shorts are awesome. Definitely check those out.
Yeah. All right, guys. That's it. CFN Halloween bonus app. Put it in the books. Thanks for listening. My name is Graham Hill.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Work it.